I'm Dr. Mila Brugic, and I'm joined with Dr. Melissa Bollinger on the Optometric Insights Show, where today we're going to be talking about the DL on MGD and IITs. Dr. Melissa Bollinger, thank you so much for being on the show. For those that are unfamiliar with you, tell us a little bit more about yourself, your practice, and really where your passion lies within optometry.
Sure. Thank you so much, first of all, for having me on your show. I'm really honored to be on it. I've practiced about 30 years in optometry, which shocks even me to say that. I've spent the majority of my career working with anterior seg surgeons. And crazy but true, that led to my passion in helping people with dry eye. I've been around many refractive surgery patients, done their post-op care, premium IOL patients. And as we all know, the ocular surface issues that can occur afterwards can really affect their quality of vision and their, how they feel about their outcome. So I started to realize how important the tear film is to that outcome. And in 2009, I developed a dry eye clinic before it was cool to actually have a dry eye clinic.
So you saw the necessity, you saw the need, and then you said, we need to pay more attention to this. What's remarkable is when you did that in 2009, we had a sliver of the diagnostics and the therapeutics that we currently have available, which kind of brings us to today. Because you have some really interesting data, and you and Mitch Jackson actually, again, work together, but you had this kind of neat idea around a study. And tell us a little bit about the design of the trial and why you actually wanted to study this.
Sure. So being that I spend so much time trying to help dry eye patients, and I think all eye clinicians realize at this point, especially from the studies like the DEWS2, that the majority of patients who are suffering from dry eye, the underlying etiology is due to MGD. So I wanted to zone in on that. And the other thing that's always surprised me is that there really is no standardized or evidence-based protocol on how to treat MGD. So I think a lot of patients or doctors will start with, heat, compresses, this type of thing.
So give us a little bit of the backing now. What was your question that you wanted answered? And how did you go about answering that question?
Sure. In our practice, we have access to lots of different treatments. And at the time, we were doing a lot of thermal pulsation treatments for our MGD patients. And a lot of our referring doctors were asking, does that really work? Why are we not just doing warm compresses? And so it begged me to dig into that. So we designed a study with a one-to-one randomization with half the group using warm compresses, specifically a brooder mask, and half doing an ILUX treatment, a single ILUX treatment.
And then with the heat mask, how many times a day were those individuals asked to utilize that mask?
We asked them to do it twice a day, 10 minutes each time. It was done with a brooder mask. And we had them track their compliance with a journal.
That's interesting. Because with the active treatment in the office, you know exactly what they're going to get. But what did the compliance look like over that 2-month time period of the follow-up?
I think it was exactly as any eye clinician would expect. About 60% were non-compliant, and about 40% were compliant. And that also makes you think, okay, that was just 8 weeks. Can you imagine after that how non-compliant they become?
Right. And now give us a summary. So now you have these two groups and you're watching them over. It was an 8-week time period.
8 weeks. Right.
So give us a summary of the data, what you looked at, and what are the similarities and the differences between the data?
Absolutely. So our primary objective or endpoint, we looked at change in meibomian gland score from baseline to 8 weeks. Our secondary endpoint, we also looked at that same baseline to 2 weeks on the MGS score, as well as looking at the subjective with OSDI scores from baseline to 8 weeks.
Great. And give us a summary of the data. What did you find with the meibomian gland scores? What did you find with the OSDI? I think you looked at another few ocular metrics as well, too, tear film breakup time.
Absolutely. Yes. So it was from the baseline to 8 weeks. We did meet our primary objective. We saw statistically significant data in the ILUX group over the warm compress group in those changes. We saw similar data in tear breakup time, interestingly. In our OSDI, both groups showed statistically significant improvements. with iLux slightly moving forward, but it was not statistically significant when we compared the two at 8 weeks.
So functionally, how the eye is functioning, they're looking better over time with the treatment arm versus the warm compress arm. But saying that, you're at least improving how patients are feeling over that 8 week time period. Is that a correct assessment of kind of the data or the summary?
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think as clinicians, we all are starting to believe and understand if we can improve the functionality of the meibomian gland to produce, you know, clear meibom and increase the lipid layer of the tears to reduce evaporation, we're going to help the majority of dry eye patients. So I think the results are very much expected in that as we got that increase in MGS, we also saw increase in tear breakup time. I think it is not terribly surprising as I look at the data that we didn't get the OSDI as a statistically significant component at that point with iLux over warm compress. But to me as a clinician, that's what I see every day where I come in and see a change with the patient, no matter what I'm treating them with. And it takes a while for the patient to subjectively come around to that. So to me, that kind of fit what I see in clinic.
Yeah, we actually, Melissa, and I don't know if this is going to start becoming a standard of care in some of the clinical trials that we're performing, but we're starting to now, with our dry eye patients, do the proparacaine test, where we literally ask them on a scale from 0 to 10 right now, how do your eyes feel? Put a drop of proparacaine in the eyes and ask them that same question 90 seconds later to see whether or not those symptoms are alleviated, because we would expect for somebody who has everything that's occurring on the ocular surface and peripherally located for them to go down to a zero with proparacaine in the eyes. And what we're finding is there's a subset of these patients who don't go down to zero and don't even change at all. Well, those are people that are maybe less influenced by the things that we're doing on the ocular surface. And those people, we only started doing this about 2 to 3 months ago on a regular basis, but we're communicating results a little bit differently with these individuals, specifically with respect to what we perceive as being a potential neuropathic etiology for some of these patients. So I think that's going to be important as well too. What I find interesting, Melissa, about your whole story here is that you're in a predominantly surgical setting, and I don't work in a surgical setting, but I work a lot with pre and post-op patients. So it was amazing. Patients go through this honeymoon phase after cataract surgery where they love everything. And then 3 months after that cataract surgery, they're like, become these hyper-acute observers where if there are ocular surface deficiencies, although they don't necessarily complain about them early on, they really start to complain about them after. So we found that identifying these individuals early on, just like you do, is important so that they know this is what your eye is doing right now. We need to optimize this for surgical care. And this may even be a challenge after, but we're going to manage you through it, as opposed to, I didn't hear anything about it. We have surgery. Now we're hearing about all this dry, because immediately the surgery then gets blamed. So we've learned that the hard way. But here's what I wanted to kind of dig into, because you really saw this void or gap in your practice. And this was a unique study because this was what's referred to as an IIT, or an investigator-initiated trial. And I think this is like such an awesome opportunity to just share with the audience, how, if you have an idea clinically, like how would you propose something like that to an industry for potential funding purposes? Like, take us through what that process is, Melissa.
Sure. Yeah, there's a couple ways you can do it. If you go to the major industry sites, you know, Alcon, Bausch & Lomb, et cetera, they have a research area where they have some proposed research topics if you don't really want to come up with one on your own, and you can submit a proposal right there online to do that. We chose to go out on our own and go with our own topic. And so initially, you know, your first contact, I think, is an MSL, a medical science liaison that are in the research area of those companies. Let them know you're interested. You know, they're always looking for doctors to get on board.
And Melissa, can you just define what some people are very familiar with medical science liaisons. Other people aren't, like they may not necessarily see them in their practices. Can you just define what that is at these companies?
Sure. They work in different departments. Some of them are in medical affairs. Some of them are in research. A lot of them are optometrists. Some are pharmacists. Some are MDs. And they're really that. I think it's a very interesting thing they're doing because they understand the doctors. You know, I think before it was kind of going, through a salesperson or someone who they needed that middle person. I think it's a fascinating area. A lot of people are going into industry, colleagues of ours, and becoming MSLs. And it's great to have someone who really understands what you're going through, understands, you know, your educational background, and be able to, you know, relate to them.
I love that some of these leadership roles are being filled by optometry now. Again, we are really becoming the crux of the identity of some of these companies just because they're realizing the expertise that we have, and they're really recruiting and leveraging that expertise, and seeing our colleagues in these spots is absolutely awesome. So now you have the ear of the MSL, or the medical science liaison. So what's the next step? How does this progress?
Sure. So you submit your initial proposal, which is not too involved, and the MSL will, you know, help you through it. And then if they approve it, then you design your own protocol, which is, it's like learning a new language. It's been fascinating to do this, because prior to this, I had worked in industry sponsored studies where I was just serving as the investigator clinician. I was not designing the protocol. So I was starting from the beginning on this.
So Melissa, now do you have to, when you're submitting these proposals, like through the MSL with kind of their guidance, do you have to put proposed budgets and things like that as well too, when you're putting these things together?
Absolutely you do. And you have to work with a biostatistician. So they will determine your sample size. So it's critical that they figure out what would be statistically significant. They look at other studies that have been done on that subject area. And they run, I mean, these people are math wizards, and they run these calculations for you. And I wouldn't even attempt it, and come up with that number for you. And then, of course, that company has to accept that number that the biostatistician has come up with as well. And that determines how many people will be in your study.
That's great. Well, Melissa, I will tell you that I just had the good fortune of working with a biostatistician. And I will tell you, in the realm of vision science, their level of knowledge to really decoding and peeling back the layers of the onion and helping us understand what's statistically and clinically meaningful is absolutely an art. Melissa, you're such an asset to the profession. You just every single time I interact with you, you're always doing things the right way. You're promoting the profession through just awesome patient care, and you're really emulating what I think is excellence in the way that optometry and ophthalmology are working together. So for all of those things, thank you for everything that you do for the profession.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. You do that as well.
Well, we all try and do it in our own little ways, Melissa, but you definitely have captured the eye of the profession. We thank you for that. And thank you all for joining us for this episode where we got the DL on MGD and IITs.
Thanks again, friends, for joining us for this episode. Again, thanks to team for their support of this episode. If you're considering or have ever considered getting a virtual team member for your practice, check out hireteam.com. That's hireteem.com. Mention the OI show when signing up, or hit the link below for a $250 discount off of your first month's team member.